Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Skylar Jeremias. As 2023 comes to a close, we look back on some of the major advancements from the past year, from the long-awaited market introduction of adalimumab biosimilars in the U.S., to the first major regulatory approvals for neurology biosimilars, to the implementation of key policy initiatives around the globe. A lot of eyes had been on the United States, and 2024 shapes up to be another big year for the biosimilar industry, with approvals for denosumab, aflibercept, and on-body pegfilgrastim biosimilars on the way. Additionally, the nation will continue to see the fallout from the implementation of the Inflation Reduction Act, including its policies regarding Medicare price negotiations, as well as the role interchangeability designations will play into adoption rates. It also remains to be seen whether payers and pharmacy benefit managers are ready to embrace newer biosimilars and add them to formularies as preferred products, leaving the future for a sustainable biosimilar industry up in the air. Today, I'm joined by Brian Behan, Senior Director of Biosimilar Commercialization, and Corey Ford, Vice President of Reimbursement and Patient Access and Policy Insights at Cencora, formerly AmerisourceBergen. Both of them have been keeping a close watch on the biosimilar space throughout the year, and today's discussion will surround how this year sets up a new chapter for the industry. Welcome to you both. To start us off, Brian, how do you think biosimilars with new administration methods, such as the potential for biosimilars for Neulasta Onpro, will impact uptake rates in the pegfilgrastim market?
Yeah, it's an exciting time for this category. We are expecting a launch of biosimilars in reference to Neulasta's Onpro or on-body device at some point in 2024. And this is really a tremendous opportunity for biosimilars to gain share in this marketplace and to drive cost savings. To date, the Neulasta Onpro device holds about 50% of the market. So there is a lot of opportunity there for biosimilars to come in and grab that market share. And like I said, drive savings for patients. One of the things that we do here at Cencora is we really work with our manufacturer partners to help them develop what we kind of call our wraparound services. So patient support or reimbursement support services. We really advise our manufacturer partners that when they're developing biosimilars, they need to make sure that these wraparound services are kind of on par or even better than their brands that they're competing against. The reason that I bring that up is because their biosimilar product is the same as the brand product from a safety and efficacy standpoint. But in this instance, in these products that you bring up, the administration method is different. The device is different. So we're also working with our manufacturer partners to think about that along with these wraparound services of can they try to match the device that's being used today? Or is there a different way that this could be administered where they could potentially differentiate their product?
How do you think the dual pricing strategy employed by several adalimumab biosimilar manufacturers will impact uptake rates for these products? Do you think this strategy will make a difference in whether payers and PBMs choose to cover adalimumab biosimilars?
Yeah, we've seen more and more manufacturers adopt this dual pricing strategy. And most of the reason that they're doing this dual pricing strategy is really to secure formulary position, right, with payers and providers. So I do think from that standpoint, it is providing payers and PBMs with more flexibility and choice of what they can cover. So from that perspective, I do think it will help the uptake of biosimilars just because there is more choice. And hopefully that choice is making them put those biosimilar products on formulary and creating more access for downstream patients. But I will say on the flip side, the dual pricing strategy has caused some confusion for customers. Specifically in the Humira market, our customers are already dealing with 9 different manufacturers of products. Now you're boiling down those 9 manufacturers and their products into potentially 2 versions of that product with 2 different WAC price points. So with anything else in this market, I think there's a learning curve here where our customers need to become more comfortable with the products. Again, the PBMs need to become more comfortable with the products. But from a standpoint on the dual pricing, I do think it has been an effective strategy. I think something we'll see in the future with other product categories. But I do think it comes back to education and making sure everyone understands why this is occurring, which products they can use, and just kind of managing that inventory. I would add that here at Cencora, we do have a team of market access strategists who do assist our manufacturer partners during the pre-launch phase, where they can try to understand what does the product landscape look like, how should they price their products. So we are here to help with that. And I would encourage any manufacturer partner in development of a biosimilar to reach out to Cencora so that we can assist in that process.
For Corey, now that some of the provisions of the IRA have been in place for over a year, how do you foresee other portions of the IRA that have yet to be implemented will change the biosimilar landscape?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think we can even take a look at this from what has happened thus far and what is still yet to come. Because when we think about the impact of the Inflation Reduction Act on biosimilars, there's really two that stand out. One, very directly in terms of the change in reimbursement in Medicare Part B, moving from that, moving to ASP plus 8% of the reference product for biosimilars, which began in 2023. And, you know, it's very interesting to kind of see what the impact here has been. And it's been pretty nominal at best, you know, kind of speaking to what Brian was talking about a little earlier in terms of when we look at some of the uptake in 2023, for most of the biosimilars within Part B, it's been relatively flat. Maybe some products have had a percentage increase or two from, you know, quarter to quarter, but we really haven't seen a significant uptake in biosimilars in Part B with this reimbursement change. And so that's just something that, you know, that was one of the reasons policymakers, their intent was to potentially help spur on the use of biosimilars, but it's still relatively kind of have been flat from the Medicare Part B perspective. But to your point about what is to come, right? We know biosimilars and even reference products are exempt from the Medicare negotiation program, which has frankly received, I think, the lion's share of attention from a regulatory standpoint with CMS. But I think an even larger, impact to industry, and then also biosimilars, is going to be the redesign that we are going to see within the Medicare Part D benefit, particularly as Brian has mentioned, we're now starting to see the shift in the biosimilar market for more of that medical benefit or Part B side to the pharmacy side into Medicare Part D, particularly with the Humira biosimilars. And so that is something, there are a few things that are happening in 2024. Patient out-of-pocket costs are being capped once they get to the catastrophic coverage within the Part D redesign and expansion of the low-income subsidy. But the primary changes that we're going to see within the new benefit happen in 2025, where for the first time, we'll have a true out-of-pocket cap in Part D, capping patient costs, at least for that year, $2,000. And so certainly from a patient perspective, not only do some of the lower costs that biosimilars may offer be helpful from that out-of-pocket perspective, but that $2,000 is going to be helpful as well. The one thing, though, that we need to, I think, really be cognizant about and manufacturer partners, you know, within some of these therapeutic areas, you know, particularly when we think about immunology, rheumatoid arthritis, and those, is that, you know, the unintended consequences, right, of what could happen with this provision. While certainly it's a good thing that patient affordability challenges may be somewhat minimized with this out-of-pocket cap, Part D plans are going to be taking on a significantly higher liability now in terms of what they have to pay for high-cost medications, but even including biosimilars as well. And so they're going to have to react, and they really have just a few levers to pull. They can increase premiums, but they compete on premiums against each other for lives. And so you may not see a significant increase in premiums because of that. So they're left with a couple other levers. That's drug coverage and access restrictions. And so when we think about drug coverage, we could see potentially narrow formularies, right? When we think about this class where Humira, that all the biosimilars are in, they don't have protected status like we see potentially on the oncology side or HIV AIDS side. And so there could be a challenge here in terms of what the formulary coverage looks like, not just for Humira, right, but also for the biosimilars as well. And then I think utilization management is certainly to go up just across the board in Part D. And so I don't think biosimilars would be exempt from that as well. And so we've done some work with our, what we call our managed care network, where we have surveyed payers to get their thoughts about what they're thinking of doing in 2025. And they validated some of those things, right? narrower formularies, higher utilization management, and just kind of more of that pricing pressures back on manufacturers of both reference products and biosimilars in some of these very, very competitive classes.
What does the FDA's recent draft guidance on interchangeability mean for the future of the designation?
So I can take that one. So just in general, Cencora is in support of any regulatory change that promotes biosimilars. And we feel that this draft guidance does that. So the recent guidance no longer recommends that labeling for interchangeable biosimilars include an interchangeability statement. So we think this is a step in the right direction to potentially removing the interchangeability designation. What we've heard with conversations with our downstream customers is that the designation is causing confusion. It's causing some to believe that the non-interchangeable biosimilars are potentially inferior to the interchangeable biosimilars, and we know that's not the case. We've also seen that there's been a push by some legislators to remove the interchangeability designation altogether. There's also studies being done right now to address the need for those switching studies that are now required to get the interchangeability designation. So there is momentum for the designation to be changed or removed and make the U.S. market more in line with our European counterparts.
In what ways do regulatory frameworks need to adapt to accommodate the growth of biosimilars, and what impact might this have on the competitive landscape of the biopharmaceutical industry?
Yeah, I think this may be both Brian and myself. Brian, I don't know if you want to take it from kind of the pure FDA's perspective, and I'll be happy to take it from the CMS side.
Yeah, sure. I think, again, we support any kind of regulatory change that's going to promote biosimilars. So I think right now there's a push from our manufacturer partners to find kind of any way that they can reduce their development costs, right? These are not like pure generics where they're much more costly to make biosimilars, right? We're talking hundreds of millions of dollars to develop these. So the thing that we hear from our manufacturer partners all the time is, how can we reduce those costs? How can we become more efficient and develop more biosimilars, which I think everyone in the industry is pushing for. So we promote anything that the legislators are looking to do or regulatory changes that are looking to do to promote biosimilars and reduce those costs. I would say on the flip side of that, we do need to be careful where any changes where we potentially reduce the need for maybe certain clinical studies or clinical trials impacts the view of patients and providers in biosimilars. So we still need to keep that confidence in these products that they are the same as their brand counterparts. So we need to kind of look at that balance and make sure we still have that balance when we make these changes. But we are in favor of any kind of change that can be done to help our manufacturer partners reduce those development costs.
Yeah, and I'll kind of tackle this from the CMS side, right? When we think about this from a Medicare perspective, specifically, you know, by and large, I think from a Cencora standpoint, we are also very supportive of trying to enhance patient access within these government programs to biosimilars. And I think that also mirrors, frankly, you know, kind of how we have partnered with our manufacturer partners, you know, on this as well. And one thing, you know, really to kind of continue thinking about as we get more and more, which we're in the process right now of trying to have the regulatory guidance for the Part D redesign, is still trying to maintain some of those very important beneficiary protections, right? You know, as I mentioned, higher liability for plans. And so CMS is trying to strike the proper balance between, you know, offering plans that flexibility to manage the Part D benefit while still also building in strong beneficiary protections. And so, you know, it's going to be very important knowing what plans are having to incur now that a lot of these beneficiary protections are still put in place, like the formulary review process that CMS says is still very rigorous, right? To make sure that patients have a wide range of access to not just drugs and drug classes specifically, but also the types of products, right? Both reference products and biosimilars as well.
What considerations should policymakers take into account when developing policies to encourage the development and approval of biosimilars, particularly in terms of balancing innovation, affordability, and patient access?
Yeah, I think I would reiterate my answer from the last question again. I think policymakers need to take into account the sustainability of this market and understand that they are different biosimilars are different from generics, and there are increased costs for developing these types of products. And again, going back to that balance of trying to help our manufacturer partners so that they want to continue to produce these products, which are driving savings to our downstream patients. I think you'll see that today, manufacturers are really targeting those larger branded products, right, that have lots of revenue, which is it was the right, obviously, move for them to try and gain share and gain revenue for their company. But we need to find ways to make these easier to develop, less costly to develop, so that we can have biosimilars in reference to all biologics that are out there, not just the large ones that are out there today, even smaller ones. So I think anything that the policymakers can do to, again, help our manufacturer partners reduce those costs in development and then balance the trust in these products so that they can be used in the future.
Yeah, and I'll also, to Brian's point, reiterate kind of what we just talked about, at least from the Part D perspective or the Medicare perspective, I should say, from CMS. But to take it a little further on the affordability and the patient access standpoint, you know, obviously, I've talked a good bit about the Inflation Reduction Act, which has a significant impact on the Medicare program. But I think policymakers certainly have an opportunity to maximize that patient access and minimize their affordability challenges in other markets, particularly the commercial market. And, you know, I know that, again, Cencora, we are very largely supportive of enhancing those patient access opportunities. But one thing I can say from the manufacturer perspective, is certainly on the commercial side, something that's been going on from a legislative perspective is trying to, you know, end or halt some of the restrictions that we see being put on financial assistance that may be provided and afforded by the manufacturers, but the reference products, but also biosimilars as well. Because as Brian mentioned, even within this space, we largely see biosimilars being on par in terms of those wraparound services, the financial support that they are providing. They're generally on par with the reference products. And so I think that's another opportunity for policymakers is really, you know, thinking about ways to ensure that patients have access to all the types of assistance that may be available to them.
And lastly, for both of you, do you have any concluding thoughts or anything you want to bring up that we haven't already discussed?
Yeah, I can go first. I think kind of our mission statement here at Cencora, we really are committed to unifying stakeholders across the supply chain to support the biosimilar channel and to support access to these products. I specifically work with our manufacturer partners. So we do have integrated solutions for our manufacturer partners to help them across their commercialization journey. This is navigating market dynamics, executing successful launch plans, and then eventually driving access and uptake of their biosimilar products.
Yeah, and I'll take that just a step further. Sitting on the market access consulting team is, to Brian's point, I mean, it's everything from, you know, starting, you know, we support our manufacturer partners from everything from the development standpoint to then, you know, taking, you know, developing those strategies and tactics you need to engage payers. And then also your patient support strategy, where there still may be gaps in terms of coverage and access restrictions. We've been very fortunate on our team. We have supported, I think, an overwhelming majority of the U.S. biosimilar launches, and so have a really strong position there. And as we know, it's only going to get even more prevalent, and just look forward to that in the future.
Well, Brian and Corey, thank you for sharing your insights with us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information on everything we discussed in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.